Hey everyone, welcome to School Conversations. We just thank you for joining us tonight and for coming to the conversation. You can always make a comment and ask a question as we're talking. And tonight we're going to be talking about how to utilize audiobooks in your homeschool schedule. And our special guest tonight is Jim Hodges, who is known as the voice or the voice behind many audiobooks, and he has a lot to share. I'm excited to hear what you have to say, Jim. Welcome, and
Thank
thank you
you.
for joining us
Thank
tonight.
you for having me, Peggy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about audiobooks, which I'm sure people know about, but there's some ways that we can use audiobooks to expand learning, to supplement, to and to even make some of our learning more fun, can't we?
Yes. If nothing else, I've given serious consideration to changing the banner that I have across the back of my booth. Jim Hodges audiobooks, bringing history to life, to Jim Hodges audiobooks because mom can only read out loud so much.
Isn't that the truth? I spent so many times doing read out louds during lunch because I knew my kids were like captive audience when they were eating. But then I didn't get to eat.
You don't
So
get to eat, right?
exactly.
All
So there's a bonus in that. Mom won't
right. There's
starve.
much to be said, and one of the things that I always noticed about my kids, especially when they were quite young, and grandkids that I'm reading to now, you read them a book, and they say, "Again,
Yes, exactly. I can't
again."
tell you how many times my oldest listened to books and I could have never read that many times.
That many times, exactly. So to be able to just say, "Okay, again, we'll put it in and we'll hit play again," and you just listen to it. Great time saver if nothing else. It's great to have it's great to have somebody else's reading style
Yes,
to
that is so true.
help children recognize that there's just not mom's way of reading things.
Exactly.
I'm saving for sure. Pronunciation, there's regionalism. If you're a Southern or Californian or from Boston and you're listening to an audiobook from somebody that it was has a Midwest Ohio pronunciation, you're going to realize, oh, I remember we went to and lived in Oklahoma City for many years. It was my last duty station with the Navy. There was a reserve center there. We went to a church, and it was the first time that I had ever heard the word hen pronounced as if it had an I in the middle of it instead of an E. Everybody said hen.
Hen.
And I thought, that's a measurement of wheat in the Old Testament. Heard, like, oh, you mean hen? And so there's regionalisms that the kids will hear and learn to realize that not everybody speaks like mom and dad.
I never even thought about that.
Just pronunciation. Anyway, there's lots of information that can be transmitted through your ears. A young listener, or to anybody who's listening to an audiobook that you might not get by reading the book yourself or having mom read everything to you. So anyway,
Yeah, exactly. So now your website is Jim Hodges Audiobooks. And but how did you get into doing audiobooks? I want to know that story.
Let's see, do you want the hour-long edition or
Well, we
the
want to get to some other questions too, so you might have to abbreviate
How much
it
time do we have? That
a
no.
bit.
It actually, I can attribute my audiobook career to a second grade teacher whose name eludes me. I actually think I have report cards that I could probably find out her name because, and I attribute it to her because she asked the class, of which there were probably 30, would somebody like to read, Dick and Jane? And I raised my hand and I thought, yeah, sure, I'll do that. I know how to read. So I read one page of a Dick and Jane storybook, and it ended with, "Run, Dick, run." Well, there was an exclamation point at the end of that, and I knew what an exclamation point meant. So, of course,
I added some,
you know, some enthusiasm to this statement. Mm-hmm. And the teacher was very much taken aback. She said, "Oh, Jim, that was wonderful. Would you like to read another page?" Hmm. And from that point forward, I was hooked on reading out loud. And it was not something that I had any training for. I was seven for crying out loud, you know.
Right.
It seemed to be something that came quite naturally to me. So from that point forward, I always raised my hand and offered to read out loud in class all the way through high school. I did theater in high school. I did theater in college. I did theater and community theater in Corpus Christi, Texas, actually.
Wow. Yeah, we have a beach house near there.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
I was stationed the very first duty station after boot camp, and there's a naval air station there. They train pilots, and it also happens to be where I met my bride, Monica, 39 years as of last Tuesday.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. And I actually courted her as we were driving back and forth to play practice, because she... She wanted to do sets and, you know, makeup and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to be in the play. And I said, "Well, why don't you come with me?" Yeah. So little did she know I had ulterior motives for getting her in the car an hour this way and an hour that way every night of the week. So it was. So anyway, I would read out loud a lot in class. I did theater.
Yeah.
Once I became a Christian, I would volunteer to read in services, and I sang some solos, and I've always enjoyed performing. It's just something that I feel very comfortable with. My parents thought it was because I wasn't comfortable with myself, so it was easier for me to be somebody else, which was very much true. Huh. I'm comfortable with myself now, I'm happy to report.
That's good.
after 20 years in the Navy, my wife and I were on a date, and we were at a Cracker Barrel in Shawnee, Oklahoma. And she said, "So what are you going to do after you get out of the Navy?"
Hmm.
And I said, "You know, I'm a great office administrator. That's what I do in the Navy. Capital city of Oklahoma is Oklahoma City, which is right here.
Right.
We got Tinker Air Force Base. I can certainly get a government. I can get a job as an office administrator. Don't worry. We'll figure out where the next paycheck's coming from."
Uh-huh.
And she said, "Okay, all right. Well, let me ask you a different question. What would you do with money is no object? It's going to pay all that we need to."
That's a good question.
What a great question.
Yes.
If you do anything you wanted, what would you do? And I said, "I would record books." And she said,
just right like that.
I definitely. It's something that I had been wanting to do, voice work, for a long time. And I thought, I've been filtering all this stuff down through my mind. I thought, recording books would be great, because I can just stay at home. I can record the book and then, sell it to the book company, I called all the publishing houses, and they said, "Sounds like you got a great voice, Mr. Hodges. Move to New York."
Hmm.
Move to Los Angeles. Move to Chicago. It's 1999. We've got the internet. I can set up I can do this at home, and I'll just record here and then I'll send it to you. And they said, no, you have to come here.
Hmm.
All right. Well, then I guess I'll just start my own audiobook business. I mean, that was just, but I had my wife's backing on this. So, so I bought a good microphone. I bought good software. I bought a good computer, and I set up a little studio in our bedroom, and I started recording, the Henty books. Cause I thought, all well in homeschool circles. And I've been 1999 is when my first audiobook came out. So 2019 is my 20 year anniversary of doing this full time.
Wow.
Yeah. Amazing thing.
Yeah, definitely. I love the Henty books. And do you want to describe to our audience just a little bit about what J.A. Henty's books are about?
George Alfred Henty was a Victorian Englishman. He lived from 1832 to 1902. So he was in London, British citizen, virtually mirroring the reign of Queen Victoria.
Right.
So Queen Victoria is well known as of having a very high moral tone to her personal life and to her empire. Hmm. And that moral tone was just part of the culture, and Henty inculcated it completely. I think that's the right use of that word.
I wouldn't be the one to ask. incorporated.
So he was a real smart guy. He did well in his elementary school. His father sent him to Cambridge for a couple of years, the Cambridge University. It was Caius College, which was part of the Cambridge University system. Okay. And he realized after a little while there that he did not want to lead a studious life. He wanted to lead a more active life. So he went to his dad and said, you know, thanks for sending me to Cambridge and everything, but I think I'd really prefer to have a commission in the military. So his father purchased him a commission, because that's how they did things back then. You could buy it.
Uh-huh.
So he became an officer in the Supply Corps of the British Army. He served in the Crimean War between Russia and Turkey, in England, the side of Turkey, I'm pretty sure. And he worked for Florence Nightingale in the Scutari Military Hospital. Wow. And while he was there, he would send letters home to Dad telling him what, I don't know what you're hearing in the newspapers, Dad, but this is what's happening here.
Uh-huh.
So his dad took the letters and gave them to the newspapers. And the newspapers published them. So when he got sick and resigned his commission and came home to recuperate, the newspapers said, hey, when you get well, we'd love to hire you as a reporter. So they sent him to Russia, to India, to Jerusalem, to Africa. They sent him all over the world to report on the home front of the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
The 1800s, the British Empire was everywhere.
Right, exactly.
So now he's got Cambridge education, military experience, worldwide travel. And he would tell, he was married and had kids by this time, and he would tell his kids stories around the dinner table after they had dinner.
Ah.
And a friend said, that would make a great book.
Huh.
So he wrote Out on the Pampas. Took him 3 years to find a publisher, but when he did, it became a runaway bestseller. And they said, have you got more? And he ended up writing 122.
I know, he has so many books. It just, that blows my mind.
Mind-boggling.
Write that much.
Yeah, it's crazy. The books average 300 to 400 pages in length. The shortest one I've done is 7 hours and 40 minutes. The longest one was 13 hours and 19 minutes.
Wow.
But they tell stories from ancient history, the Middle Ages, the Reformation time period, modern history, American history.
Yeah, and they captured my children's attention. You know, like boring, dry history books.
They're not a textbook. They're an adventure novel. That's how I describe them.
Yes, definitely.
Worthy, accurate adventure novel, because that's the best encapsulation I can come up with to describe them.
Yeah.
And the hero character is just the fine young man you'd ever want to meet.
Mm-hmm.
So they provide great role models for your sons.
Exactly.
And great role models for your daughters, the kind of guy that they should be aspiring towards. If they're
inclined. That's a huge bonus. Is children learn so many lessons by listening to stories.
Yes.
It's like this side thing. It's not what they're trying to teach, but just by the character of that person, you do aspire to try to be that person.
What's modeled for you is what you try to imitate, or if it's a bad modeling, you try to get away from that. And so the empty models, you know, his theory was, we don't need examples of people behaving badly.
Oh no, we see them all the time.
Who is that?
Yeah.
So anyway, his heroes are phenomenal young men, respectful, appropriate relations with the females that they come in contact with, deferential to authority, reverent, you know, they pray and they go to church, and Henty's not trying to convert anybody, but it's clear that he is a Christian, and he's following appropriate Christian behavior. for the young people in the midst of trials and tribulations and dangers. Right.
Those hard decisions and how to choose and what, I mean, the stories even go into how he grapples with things.
Yes.
And how do I make the right decision based on what's in front of me? And those are the modeling things.
And in one case, the hero gets caught up in the Inquisition and he has a conversation with his friend. He says, well, if they ask me direct questions, I can't lie. I'm not going to lie to get out of this. And I know what the repercussions of that might be, but you can't lie. That's just the wrong thing to do. You have to tell the truth. So regardless of the potential cost to them, they're willing to stand by their moral framework. And anyway, it's just great, great modeling for kids.
Well, and we always talk, especially kids on the autism spectrum, modeling is such a thing. We talk about social stories so much with working with kids on the autism spectrum, because oftentimes they can't interpret those social cues.
Right.
But audiobooks allow that modeling to happen in an imaginary form, so that the kids don't feel like somebody's critiquing me and on my case all the time. It allows them to watch it from a third party
conversation.
Yes, exactly.
How do I compare to this?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of feedback. I'm going to move my microphone a bit. Hopefully that I make sure you can still hear me well enough. Okay.
Yep. I can hear you perfectly still.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's it's intriguing in so many, just in so many variables that we don't think of. An audiobook is just, yeah, it's a supplement for reading some, that's how we started out, but it's so much more. And that's one of them. It's kind of like these hidden gems inside of audiobooks to be able to know that they're helping with character building and so many other things within our teaching.
And frankly, there's more mental engagement with reading a book or hearing a book than there is when you're watching a movie.
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. You have to make you. I tell people all the time. I don't remember the words that I've read in a book. What I remember is the movie that I made in my head.
Oh yeah, exactly.
While I was reading the book, and there's something really interesting, Peggy, that I've been. I have put some Google automatic searches up, so anytime. Mm-hmm. An article comes out relating to audiobooks.
Uh-huh.
Every time audiobooks is included in a address bar, I get a link. And in the last year, there have been four separate studies, all scientific, double blind, college level research that's been done on how your brain processes the written word or the audio word. And as far as the human brain is concerned, whether you read a book with your eyes, with your fingers if you're blind, or read a book with your ears, your brain sees it all the same way. And the retention of, I was really surprised by that. I don't know why. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it's all input.
But the brain processes it all the same way, even though, okay, it's coming in through the ears, but when it does the word interpretation, that's all done in the same place. So whether it comes in through your eyes or your ears or your fingers, and all the word processing so has been shown to be virtually identical across all three input channels, which I just found really fascinating, because so many people think, oh, audiobooks, that's cheating.
Yeah, well, it's not.
It's not. It's quite okay, especially if you've got struggling readers, and it's a real help for them.
Right. Yeah.
It's a real help for them. Mm-hmm. Or you just have a really active kid who just is just not interested in sitting down reading a book. He can let him play Legos. Let him. Sugar cubes. Let him color. Let him do something with his hand. I'm saying he because that seems to be more common.
It is more common, yes.
So let them do something while they are listening, and they're actually going to be able to pay better attention if you will let them do that than if you make them sit still on a couch with their hands in their laps. That's just going to drive them crazy.
Right.
So you know, let them do stuff with their hands because they can listen really, really well.
Yeah, especially those kids that need that tactile, fidgety type of thing so that they focus. And we don't often equate that to focusing, but so often kids on the ADHD, you know, ADD, they focus better when they're moving.
When they're moving. And it can be very distracting to mom who's reading to have, you know,
probably
doing something bad, but, you know.
But it doesn't distract the audiobook reader because he's already been there.
It doesn't bother me a bit.
That's great. So can we dive into that question there then, you know, what are some other ways if parents have struggling readers or kids that have attention problems that they can really utilize audiobooks to their fullest extent? Because I think what we just talked about is maybe the tip of the iceberg on that subject.
Many curricula providers today, especially audio, are doing audio editions of their textbooks.
Really?
Yes. Story of the World, Susan Weisbauer and Jim Weiss record the entire curriculum.
Wow.
Linda Hobart, Mystery of History, has done audio editions of all of her books. Knott Grass is now doing audio editions of their upper level. So you can, if somebody hired me to record a textbook, I would be happy to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. I do the adventure novels and, you know, more storytelling kind of things. Although I'm not a really creative person as far as coming up with stories on my own, but I can take somebody else's work and really, I don't know. I don't think hamming it up is quite the right phrase.
You can ham up a textbook, but
And I do character voices and all that. So, I mean, if you need to do the textbook, then the audio is becoming available there. But, you know, kids learn in a lot of different ways, and it doesn't have to be in a textbook. In fact, for history in particular, it seems that a storytelling is a more, for me anyway, I think it would be more, because kids are going to remember stories about people.
Yes.
And connect them with the events from history. I think a textbook is a great thing for a nice chronological listing of the whole cause and effect of history and all of that. I think it's great. I'm not trying to denigrate textbooks. I just think kids are they're going to enjoy probably, and maybe they'll do it more of it if they're enjoying the way that they're learning history, and that would be through historical fiction novels. And it doesn't have to be Henting, it doesn't have to be me. There's plenty of good stuff out there where kids can learn with an audio book. I think one of the questions we had talked about earlier was like the when and where.
Yeah, definitely. It just, changing it up a little bit, because I know, you know, we can think of, like we were talking about, instead of mom doing read alouds, we can replace it in the house. But but audiobooks are, we can take them anywhere. My daughter and I often listen to them when we're traveling.
Right.
You know, we have them downloaded on our phones and we share an account. And so the two of us know exactly where in the book we are with each other.
Right. So definitely the car. I mean, there used to be, I don't know if it still exists, there used to be a website that was basically car schooling.
Huh.
I mean, how can you learn stuff while you're in the car? Because let's face it, a lot of homeschooling families are driving to a lot of different activities and lessons and, you know, spending a good bit of time in the car, and the family's together all day, every day, mostly.
Right.
So, if mom's got to do errands, it's like, let's go to the grocery store and have a home ec lesson, and we'll do math while we're there, and we'll learn about foods from different countries. And so they're doing all this kind of stuff anyway.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So we're gonna listen to an audiobook on the way, and listen to it on the way and on the way back. And you can actually, I mean, I know families that do this. They reserve the audiobook for the car.
Ah, yes. Uh huh.
So the kids are like, oh, good, we get to go.
We get to go. Yes, exactly. I know we sometimes bank up. So we have long summer trips, and this is what we're going to study next year. And so we can fill all those books in on the way there and way back. And then our reading's done for half or more of the school year in the year ahead.
You've already kind of prepped your brain with the general outline of the things that you're going to be learning. I actually got an email from a family a couple of years ago. They wrote and said, Jim, you're just not going to believe what happened. We were listening to with Lee in Virginia, and we were driving through Virginia while we were listening to it. And as you were speaking about the Battle of Chancellorsville, we drove by a sign for Chancellorsville. And it was just so crazy for them to have that connection. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're learning about it now. And here we are. It's like we're right here where this story that we're hearing about actually happened. And I just thought that was really cool. I also got another.
It takes that, you know, because bygone years of traveling with kids, you know, they were disconnected because they had this video on and they're watching the movie, and you know, and you don't even talk to each other when you're in the car. And my daughter and I rented a car for this trip we're on right now, and it hooks up to my phone and it gave me all the options, and I'm like, oh, we can play our book on the screen and we can put Google on, and then Google interrupts the book when it needs to give you directions, and I don't even have to think about it.
Oh my gosh.
It's great. Technology, and they'll repeat like two or three words that were said previously, so that you kind of remember where your brain can catch up.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Really cool. So that's where, you know, it's going. So even city driving, because, you know, we used to think, well, you know, if I had to concentrate on, you know, what turn I made, and, you know, I can't do audiobooks. Well, now the technology is making it possible. You can. It integrates it for you, and you don't have to worry about that.
That's great. Wow. No, that's the first time I've heard about that capability.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
So I'll have to add that to my retinue of reasons for audiobooks in the car. I do think, you know, you mentioned at the very beginning at lunch.
Yes.
I think the best recommendation that I got from a mom was, we love your audiobooks. We listen to a chapter a day, but we do it during lunch. And here's how we do it. We go to the kitchen, and it's like, okay, everybody has to make their own lunch. They're old enough to make their own lunch. So we're going to put on, you know, chapter 13, and we'll listen to that. Well, so everybody's quiet. They're busily preparing their lunch. And they eat their lunch with, you know, very little conversation or interruption, because mom's not going to stop that CD. And then when the chapter's over, they stop it. And mom goes through the sequence of the chapter to make sure that everybody understands what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Vocabulary words, you know, what's happening in the story, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And then she says, okay, well, let's get back to school. And so they didn't do the audiobooks in their school. They did it during lunch.
Right.
What she thought was amazing was, as soon as that book was over and we heard the last chapter, I would say, who wants it? And the kids would all argue over it because they wanted to listen to it again.
Uh-huh.
Well, but, you know, they had dozens of titles, then it wasn't so much of an issue anymore, because everybody always had something to listen to, and they would learn to take turns and all of that. But I thought, wow, that's a really smart way to kind of put a framework around lunch that's you know, the kids enjoyed it, but it was still educational, and it was everybody together.
Yes.
Mom got listened to, you know, that kind of, anyway, I just thought that was a really, really smart way to do things. So the car.
The vocabulary words out. And so you do word for word reading.
I do.
And so that makes it easier for, if you had the text and you were working with it, then.
Right.
You could take the words out ahead of time and figure that out.
Yes. In fact, we've done a study guide for every single Henty book that I've recorded.
Oh.
And the study guides have an assignment for every chapter in the book.
Oh.
And every assignment contains new vocabulary words in that chapter in the order that you will hear them in the chapter.
Oh, okay. Well, it's so easy, much easier to understand a word when you've heard it in context.
Exactly. Yes. So I didn't really know whether to provide the definitions or not, or whether to put them in alphabetical order or not. Or, you know, so I just said, you know what, let's just list them in the order that they come with no definition.
Yeah.
And we'll let the families decide what they want to do with that.
Yeah.
You can actually make alphabetize this list an assignment. You can make look these words up and write down the definition in assignment. Mm-hmm. You can say, listen to the chapter and write down what you think the word means from context, and then look it up and see how close you came, and that'll develop, you know, attentiveness skills. Mm-hmm. So anyway, there's a lot of stuff that you can do. And yes, I chose to do unabridged recordings because I want the title to say For the Temple by George Alfred Henty. So right. I want to be the entire book.
Yeah.
And I chose not
that to be one of my favorites. I love that book.
It's kind of a sad book because what I didn't realize was the Jews had factions that were fighting against each other behind the walls of Jerusalem, while Titus and the 6th Legion had surrounded the city. And they're like, guys, hello. Hi. No, you have a really big enemy right outside the gate and you're fighting amongst yourselves. Yeah. It was really kind of sad. But, you know, you're supposed to learn these lessons from history. You don't fight amongst yourselves when you've got, you know, the Romans at the gates.
Well, and I think that brings up a good point is, you know, these stories, when you do finish a chapter, they have so much good discussion afterwards. Yeah. And so being the parent not reading out loud, I think I have a little more breath to that. Then start those discussions and continue them with my children because I've had the ability to eat my lunch and
And you can actually be focusing on hearing the story as opposed to focusing on where's this sentence going, who's talking, how do I pronounce that word, all of that anybody who's reading out loud goes through, especially if they're reading it cold. Don't ever try to read a Henty cold. I mean. Oh. Mm-hmm. They're hard. I mean, to read out loud, you can read it to yourself, okay? But they're difficult. They're a challenge. He was a 19th century British author who was Cambridge educated. I mean, he's not and he's not Dick and Jane. You know, I give a talk at conventions sometimes about, you know, how to incorporate the Hentys into your homeschool. And for a while, I had found a passage in a book that was that long. It was an entire paragraph. What I would do was I would say, tell me what you've learned, what you can figure out as I read this paragraph in this book. And I read this long, long, long sentence with two asides. And that entire paragraph was one sentence. And that's what, you know, people finally figured out. That was one sentence. And I said, yes, but do you think you could have read it out loud and made sense of it? And they said, no. And I said, I get practice.
Yeah.
Practice. So when I read it, I know where to do the asides, kind of put a parenthesis around this little phrase, and then come back to the main sentence. You know, like I know how to do that because I've been able to preview it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Because you can kind of, you know, change your inflection to kind of set it aside versus just reading dry through the whole thing. And
Yeah. So that's that's another benefit of audiobooks. The guy who's doing the reading. But we all look up the correct pronunciation of words. We all work on our accents. We all will read that sentence. I mean, the most times I've read a sentence before I felt like I got it right was 7 times.
Wow. Before
I really felt like, okay, I got that one right. And because it was a difficult, complex sentence. And then, but you want to say it right, because my job as the reader is not to say the words out loud. My job as the reader is to A information in a way that the listener can grasp. So that's my job, is to say it in such a way that I'm actually conveying information, not just reading words.
Exactly. Yeah. And there is so much that comes with the story that
and the presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I love that. You know, just the research that you were talking about and just it being equal coming in, because I think we do play that. I've been listening to Anne of Green Gables with my daughter, and they were talking about how, you know, how awful it is that kids spend so much time reading, and, you know, and I'm thinking, we had this nice discussion afterwards about, well, You know, now they think that that's a plus thing when kids are reading and they shouldn't be playing video games. And so, yes, it was an awful thing to do, I guess. So what are some other ideas that you share with parents or parents even share with you? It sounds like a lot of parents, you know, just share interesting ways that they use audiobooks in just for learning in general and helping their students with grasping, I guess, learning or whatever they're learning about in curriculum or outside of curriculum. You can probably use it as curriculum, I would assume.
I believe I'm actually toying with the idea, since we've got, you know, Henty wrote 4 books on ancient history, one about Egypt, 2 about Rome, and 1 about Carthage.
Yep. I've read all of them.
And I've got, okay. And I've done study guide for all 4 of them, where we ask questions about the political situation and the life was like, and just, you know, draw a picture based on the description of the attire that Hannibal was wearing, draw a picture of what you think that looked like. And so you're getting steeped in the cultures of the places and the people that you're learning about, not just the history. There's a lot more going on in these books, so it can clearly branch out into geography. Under Drake's flag, Drake sails around the world. Get a map. Put a map on the wall, or put a Europe map on the wall, or put a North or South America. And as you're listening to these stories, to graph it on the map. So now you're getting a better picture of where people were when this happened and that happened. I recommend that all the time. So there's history, geography, the language is crazy because of the vocabulary and the character. So you're really, just in a Henty novel alone, and frankly, in any historical novel, any historical novel, read Liberty, not Liberty Kids, but Johnny Tremaine, you know, read that book. Read Red Badge of Courage, you know, about the Civil War. You read these books, you can draw things on a map and put down all the major character names, so you're learning more about the different people that affected history and where things took place. You can see them on the map. It's like, oh wow, he marched all the way from here to here in 24 hours with 600 troops. Oh, that's a hike. Those kinds of things can bring the history more to life. And clearly, you know, with Drake sailing around the world, he touched off on every continent practically on the way. So you're going to get a nice geography lesson. Anyway, there's lots that can be gleaned and incorporated and hung on to a historical fiction novel.
And plus, you know, like you had said earlier, when we read a novel, we get engrossed in that person's life. And so it isn't like we're following a textbook that's saying, oh, and they went here and then they went here, but we get the emotion with it. And I think emotion attaches our learning at a deeper level. And it helps kids that normally would just say, oh, you know, why, what am I going to use this for? They don't ask because they already know, and it's an intuitive understanding that this is important because you become part of that person's life.
Right. And you find out what life was like for the average Joe at that time, or maybe the different classes in society, how, okay, so the Lord of the Manor, he's got, you know, got servants and all this kind of stuff. One of the books I also recorded of Henty's was A March on London. It was about the Wat Tyler Rebellion. So the English and the French and everybody had a system of serfdom. So wherever you were born, you worked for the Lord of the Manor. When you went to war, you had to provide bodies and horse to go with him. You worked his land, you paid his taxes and tithes, you went to the local church, and you died there. Now most of them didn't leave the county that they were born in. So Wat the Tyler, he was a Roof Tyler, therefore his last name was Tyler. And, you know, there's also the baker and the candlestick maker and the, you know, so right. He got sick and tired of this. The Reformation had come about and he's like, hey, I'm a human being. Right. I have rights. The creator of the universe made me. Who says I'm your slave? Who says I have to stay here? So he started a rebellion and okay. took it all the way to London. So you're learning that there was, you know, unfairness in society back then, just like there's, you know, perceived unfairness in society today. And maybe there is a preferential treatment. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's been going on forever. If there's nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun. Right. I mean, let's face it. Mm-hmm. We've been dealing with the same issues for thousands of years, much less, you know, hundreds. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting. And then another that could be correlated to today's world was Through the Fray. And that's about the carders, the wool carders.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Rebelling against the Industrial Revolution. They came up with a faster, cheaper, smarter way for to have a machine do this. And a lot of people were thrown out of work.
Right.
Go to McDonald's. You can order on
the AI, everything. Yeah, it's changing.
And mm-hmm. so is that something new? No, that's been going on for generations. So you get this sense that there's nothing new under the sun and we're not grappling with anything that generations before haven't grappled with these exact same things. You know, so anyway, it's just.
Yeah. Well, it's a whole lesson in ethics and understanding we repeat history. And I think when we did audiobooks, my kids would often say that, why? That's what we're doing now, isn't it? Like, well, that's a really good understanding that you're getting here.
I unfortunately, I found a great quote the other day, which I put on my Facebook page, and it's, you know, I'm Jim Hodges audiobook. So that's my website. That's my Facebook page. And the quote was along these lines. It's not a direct quote. It seems that the only thing that we learn from history is that we don't learn from history.
Yeah.
We're supposed to. But it seems like we do the same things over and over and over again. And that just tells me human nature hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
We're all grappling with the same issues. It's just a different day and time, which makes history all the more fascinating to me to realize.
I think our pride takes over and we just say, well, we can do it better, and we don't learn. Or we have history books that have been turned, you know, into textbooks, not stories. And so all we see is dates and names. And I hated history when I was in high school. I thought it was the most ridiculous thing. And then I started homeschooling. And I'm like, where was this? This is the history I love.
Well, I think one thing that I've learned, because it's been, and I thought of this, I mentioned it to a mom once, and she was like, you know, you're right. And what I said was, I think I know why you were not interested in history and you don't know how to teach your kids. She said, why? I said, because when you were in high school, your history teacher was, and she went, you're right. He was. And I said, and did he care about history? Apparently not. I said, no, he didn't care about history. That was the only job that the school district said, here's the textbook, teach them this book, and then you can go practice football with the guys. And that's all he cared about. Mm-hmm. So when that's your history teacher, who's going to be interested in that?
Nobody. Exactly. Yeah.
So we have generations of people that don't care a whit for history, don't see its importance, don't see how fascinating it is until they start homeschool, and then, oh my gosh, history is so cool. Which is a great thing.
Well, and I think that happens with every subject, you know, and so it's often good to tell parents, yes, if you have a subject you hate, find somebody else to teach it so your kids don't hate it.
There you go. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But history is, you know, I think with the resources that the homeschool audiences have access to, just because they do approach it more from this historical fiction, you know, type of perspective. And a lot of the curriculums that we did mostly unit studies, but they would point to books like Giehenty and things like that. So to know that they're in audio format and that they're word for word, and especially if you have a dyslexic child that has a trouble reading, that they can follow the text while it's being read to them. If you're going to use supplemental to teach, you know, just sight words and reading and to press them through. I mean, the high school levels, there's just so much reading sometimes that the kids have to do. So,
well, guess what's on sale this month on Jim Hodges audiobooks.
I was going to bring that up. I saw it quick, but can you tell everybody in our audience what is on sale on your website? You have monthly specials, right?
I do. I have a monthly special. It's either something is available for sale as a download or I'm going to be announcing new titles. Mm-hmm. So get to my site. And if you're interested, you can sign up for the email list. And you will also get, if you sign up for the email list on my site, we give away an entire George Alfred Henty audiobook just for signing up for the email list. It's under Drake's Flag, which is a great story about Drake circumnavigating the globe. The story we talked about earlier about the young man getting caught up in the Inquisition, that takes place in that book. It's a great geography lesson. So anyway, you will get that. You'll get that just for joining the email list. But if you want to, you mentioned following along in the text because I do an unabridged recording. This month's sale item is you can download for $15, 101 Henty books all in one big, you know, like in the text in the text file format. It's that's a product that I've got on CD, and we just figured out how to package it so that you can download it, and you can get 101 Henty book in the text file format for $15.
That is an amazing deal.
And then if you want to, you can get the audio, and you can pull that book up on the screen, play the audio, and your kids can follow along in the text, and they'll learn how to make a character come to life, how to put a pause in the right place so a sentence makes sense. They'll see the correct pronunciation for this funky looking word, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, back to that copying, the modeling, when we expect kids to just be able to read and then be able to read fluently, they don't have that example. That makes it so much more difficult. Definitely. Oh, we have a comment from a viewer. I just want to put that up. Rebecca said, "Wow, I've never thought about that before. Human nature really hasn't changed. I really did too well in history as a student, and now I love it."
Hey, I'm with you, Rebecca.
I think I've had that conversation more on that side with homeschool moms than on the, "Oh, I always loved history."
I don't hear that very often. And they don't know how to teach it because they're not jazzed by it. And I say, listen, these are stories. They're stories about a great guy doing cool things throughout history. You meet all the famous people from history. So you're going to learn about Robespierre and Marat during the French Revolution. You're going to be, you know, you're going to meet Titus. You're going to meet Nero. You're going to meet William Wallace. You're going to meet Washington. You're going to meet, you know, you're going to meet all of these people in these books. Because the hero character does. So you're there with him while he's, you know, so anyway, it's just.
I think something that too, that my daughter pointed out more than my boys is that, you know, that when you're reading a novel versus text, they bring in things of daily living. So this is what we ate. This is what we wore, you know, and we don't often talk about those things, but you know, those are important when we're living our daily lives with, you know, what we don't think about that when we think about all these things going on, that those little things of life were still happening too. So it puts it in the context of living, not just these events happening simultaneously or one after another. There was so much more involved.
There were real people alive then doing interesting things and living their life. And when, If you do any kind of travel, which we've been fortunate to do, people's lives are different. I went on a mission trip to India. It seemed like everybody brushed their teeth outside and spit on the ground. We also did other things outside that we never talked about. In Japan, we visited our son when he was stationed there. We were the only Caucasians that we saw for practically 10 days. You know, they were incredibly polite people, incredibly clean people, incredibly energetic people, incredibly kind people. If you went like this, you would have somebody come up and say, you know, can I help you with the train directions? You know, I think, where are you wanting to go? You know, so you learn about the culture of the different places when you travel. Well, if you can't travel, you can go there in a book. You can go back in time in a book.
True. Yeah. Yeah. We haven't figured that one out yet.
In a book.
It's a good way to do it.
Probably much safer than, you know, getting in a time
machine. Yeah, I think so too. But yeah, definitely. And just cultural awareness and historic awareness of just how things have changed. And just, I think also we realize just with the comforts of the life that we have, it used to not always be this way. And our kids think of, when you're in that mindset of a child, that life for everyone, for every time period has always been in the context of what I'm experiencing. And to give them those stretches, you know, here and there, it broadens their horizons, definitely.
Very much. And, you know, frankly, I'm of the mindset, and I've said it often. Of course, I used to say 20th century. Now I say 21st century. I love being alive in the 21st century in the United States of America. I cannot imagine a better time nor place to be alive in all of world history. I just can't. Mm-hmm. What we have available to us and the blessings that have been bestowed on this country, and the freedoms that we have, and the fact that you can walk around with the world in your pocket and all of human knowledge in your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Right.
What? It's mind-boggling. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And I think we need to learn to be really, really grateful for the where and the when that we are alive. I couldn't be self-employed as an audiobook producer without having moved to New York or Los Angeles 10 years before I started because the technology hadn't gotten there yet.
Right.
And it's just that all came together at just the right time. And, you know, my desire to do it, my lifelong desire to be self-employed and, you know, kind of have this thing kicking around in the back of my head, the technological ability to do that. I mean, there's nothing that you can't do if you fight hard enough and think hard enough. You can figure out a way to basically live a life that you want to live. Well, that's a rarity in human existence.
So true. Yeah. We have team members from California to Indiana. And I mean, we have a worldwide reach in a year and a half from starting our ministry. It is astounding to me that
10% of my customers are international in places I've never stepped foot.
Wow. Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. So anyway, sorry to get off on that tangent, but it related to the history things, you know. It
is. And somebody will be writing about, you know, what we're doing now. And it's fascinating to think when you go back in history, just how, well, like Rebecca said, we haven't changed much, but the technology has changed. I guess it's just different settings, right?
And our standard of living, the medical care that is available to us, you know, it wasn't the beginning of last century. If you had diabetes, that was a death sentence. You're going to die because there's nothing we can do about it. And then they figured out, we can make insulin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can give people insulin. That'll help that. And just like, oh my gosh, now you're all life's extent. So anyway, sorry. I'm genuinely grateful for my time and place.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the more you study history, the more you do become that way. I mean, you're realizing that, I mean, I remember reading Little House on the Prairie books and we lived in a place where I remember just reading about how they couldn't see the barn because the snow was blowing so bad. And we lived on a farm in southern Minnesota. I could not see my barn. And I'm thinking, at least I don't live in a hole in the ground. I have somewhat of heat, not the most that I wanted. That's why we, Rebecca said indoor plumbing. Amen. Yes. So, well, thanks so much, Jim. This has been a really good discussion. I think you definitely have introduced some ways to use audiobooks that I've never even imagined. And you know, I just finished my 17th year homeschooling and I only got one left. You know, the one thing that I have done though that we haven't mentioned is my daughter and I started listening to audiobooks to do as Bible study too together. Okay. Just because it's easier with our lifestyle. And so then we just listen to the same chapter and the book, and then we discuss it, and you know, the same way you would there anything you else. There's so many non-fiction books too.
Sure.
Audiobooks, and so lots of different ways parents can incorporate those, definitely.
Very much so.
Yeah. So you can find Jim at jimhodgesaudiobooks.com.
Right? Yep.
And this month you've got that special. And if they sign up on your email list, they get a free audiobook. Free
copy Under Drake's Flag. Pretty hard to beat.
So and Jim is also one of our partner organizations. You will find him on our curriculum page for reading, writing, and math, because audiobooks are reading.
Reading, that's right. That's great. Mm-hmm.
We just appreciate all that you do, because especially for parents who have struggling readers, or they're trying to get books in when their kids read really slow, it's an advantage already, on top of all the advantages we already talked about tonight.
Sure. Well, I'm thrilled when I hear stories about how families have enjoyed them and incorporated them. And I just can't believe that I get to do this for a living, and I'm helping people. They're happy. They're happy to have the product, and I'm happy to provide it. So, you know, it's just it's a beautiful thing. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Just everything put together. Yep.
Well, thanks for having me, Peggy. I appreciate it.
You are welcome. This has been a fun conversation. It's an hour goes by really fast.
Yeah, I was just looking at it like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. So this month, for everybody that's watching, we are focusing on taking a different approach on curriculum, and not just, you know, recommending curriculum providers. We're talking about curriculum kind of out of the box, like we did last week with high school. And next week we are interviewing Judy Monday, who has this very extensive book called Teaching a Child with Special Needs. But we're going to specifically concentrate on selecting appropriate curriculum that works effective for specific students. And she's going to kind of go through her research on which curriculum works best with students that have gifts and deficits in certain areas. And so I'm excited about that. She has a very comprehensive book, and we're only going to cover a small little chapter, but it's an 80 chapter. So that'll be fun. So, and we also want to thank the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America for partially funding this broadcast. And also, just so you know, we made the top 20 homeschool podcasts this week for 2019, which is amazing, because we only started last February. So I'm over the moon with that.
That's a meteoric rise. You know that.
I know that that is a blessing. And we just want to keep, our goal is to empower you as parents to be able to homeschool your child that struggles, so that they will be successful in the future. And it's going well. So, and we're happy to be able to help. So, thanks everybody for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. Bye.